Bet. Perek Hey. Questions, comments? What do you got? Nothing. It all makes sense. Everything's good. Mm-hmm.
What's the thing Naaman said in the beginning? Such and such spoke the girl who's from the land of Israel. It's just like supposed to be unclear.
Say it again?
Where it says on Pasuk, valid.
He's saying, he basically repeated the conversation. This girl said that, oh, I know someone in Eretz Yisrael who can cure you. So he went and basically repeated what she told him to the king without getting into the exact conversation.
I don't really understand, because the whole story goes off that Naaman, he's non-Jewish, he goes and he gets his saras, and he goes to Elisha, he tells him, he says, I have a saras, come help me, everything, and he gets arrogant, he gets offended when he doesn't actually do something super miraculous. Now, this guy's not religious, not Jewish at all. Now, all he has is his attendants, who are not Jewish also. Now, that's a sub-question itself, why the servants go and tell him to listen to Elisha. They act like they're Jewish prophets in themselves.
No. Look, he goes in. What was he expecting? What kind of cure did Naaman expect?
He expected like a big cure. He expected
he thought he was going to the wizard, a magician. There was going to be some, you know, okay, special incantations. Maybe they make some cauldron with all sorts of special potions that he'd have to drink, you know. And what did he say? All right, go like Beethoven in the Jordan River, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And to which he like got offended and saying, oh, that's it. There's much better rivers where I come from. Like, that's just like stupid. And he's like leaving. And to which his attendant said, we traveled all this way. If he would have told you to do some really difficult thing, fast for 40 days, you would have done it, right? Uh-huh. It's like, why are we leaving without at least giving it a shot? It was sort of just like logic speaking. And he said, you're right. Okay, what's the big deal? You know, we made this, we slept. Fine. And then he comes out. Oh, his skin's as soft as a baby's bottom. You know, wow, okay, crazy, right?
Yeah.
But that was it. It wasn't like a Jewish thing. It was like, I traveled all this way. I was told that this guy was special. He was expecting, you know, I don't know, lightning coming down, something magnificent, and not, right, jumping the river out, you know, down the block. That he felt was very, way too natural.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on here.
Okay. So once he says that, and then he just goes and basically almost becomes, I don't remember if he became Jewish, like if he converted, or it seems like he converted.
Maybe. Yeah.
And if he converted, then that's all that it took. Like literally his servants told him, go listen to him, listen to him. It doesn't really go through what happened so much. Like just, okay.
Jewish. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. You're raising a good point. What else? Aaron, what do you got?
I found it so strange that Gehazi made a shvua that he's going to run and take something from who is it? Naaman.
From Naaman.
Yeah.
What do you mean they take a shvua?
I don't know. It says Hashem lives. I swear that I shall live.
That's just setting in parentheses.
First of all, that's in parentheses. He just decided he's going to get. We'll figure out about Gehazi. But let's start from the beginning. What letter did the king get? The king of Israel gets a letter from the king of Aram saying, cure my commander.
Yeah.
And how does the king of Israel take it? How does he understand this letter?
That he says that
he's looking for a reason to start a war with me. Right? He's going to say, what, you couldn't cure my commander? What kind of neighbor are you? That's it. Right? So the king's all getting all nervous. So what? Who can cure Tzarat? If we had a cure for Tzarat, we wouldn't have leper colonies. Right? This is ridiculous. What kind of request is he making from me? Right? So he starts freaking out. And what does Elisha say? Elisha, you know, somehow, you know, basically the Navi that he is, knows what's going on and says, what are you worried about? Let him know that what?
There's a prophet in the land that I'm feeling.
Okay. So that's this interesting thing. You know, he's let them know that there's what? What's Elisha's line?
Elisha says,
why are you ripping your clothes? Let him know let him come to me, that there's a prophet in Israel. Yeah. When you're saying the Yedak Yeshna Bibi Israel, that's sort of like saying, let him know that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I'm his representative here, I'm a Shaliach of Hashem. But, and that also explains, why doesn't Elisha accept the gift? Because it's not like some skill that I went to medical school and therefore, because of all the hard work that I put in, you should reward me financially for all the time and effort and experience that I have. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu that cured you. I didn't cure you. How could I accept money for something I didn't do? Right? Elisha views himself as absolutely a Shaliach Hashem, and it would be ridiculous to receive any money. It becomes sort of ironic how Naaman is won over. Naaman, who in the beginning is bad-mouthing Eretz Yisrael and saying, "What? There aren't better rivers where I come from." Before he leaves, what does he ask Elisha for? What does he ask him for?
Our mule team's load of earth.
Yeah, can I just have some dirt? I want to take back some dirt. All right, sounds like some, you know, nowadays souvenir. I'm sure there are like smart Jews that just sell like air from Israel. You know, I'm sure like, you know, they figured out how to convince people, oh, air from the Holy Land. I bet people spend money to get some bottle closed and said it's got air inside from the Holy Land. And they pay, but I'm sure there are. I'm sure, I could check the internet, but I'm sure someone's doing that. Right? So it sort of sounds like he's saying, I want to take back dirt. Wouldn't you think that he would say, we've got better dirt where I come from? But what happened to Naaman? He became a believer. Naaman was won over by Elisha, and he said, I need this. Now, why does he need it? What does he say? What is the reason why he wants the dirt? Why does he want the dirt? What does he need the dirt for?
Carbon.
He says, I'm going to go back. And what's going to happen? The king is going to lean on me, and we are going to... Find the pasuk. Where does it say that?
Yes, Isaiah, pasuk 18.
Read it out loud.
May Hashem forgive your servant for this one thing, however. When my master comes to the temple of Rimon to bow down there, he leans on my arm, so I must bow in the temple of Rimon. When I bow down the temple of Rimon, may Hashem forgive your servant for this one thing.
In other words, what do I want to do? I want to take the dirt and put it in that area. And when I have to bow down to these alien gods, I'll be thinking about the God in Eretz Yisrael, the God of Elisha, and this will be what will keep me strong. Okay? And what is the response of Elisha? Pasuk Yetet. Vayomer lo, lech l'shalom. Well, how do you understand that? Was he saying, okay? Or was he saying, don't do it? What do you think?
I heard a difference between lech l'shalom and...
Well, lech, what's it between lech l'shalom and lech b'shalom?
Lech, go to peace.
And what do you say to someone who's alive? Lech l'shalom. So he's saying lech l'shalom, seemingly it's a good thing, right? Now my question is, what is he saying? Okay, take the dirt, or he's saying
get
no.
Get out of here.
What do you think? Says the machlokas. The Rabbag says he agrees, and he gives it to him. He says, here's the dirt. And the Bar Benel says, don't do it. You're under no obligation to do this. You're not Jewish. And you don't have to risk your life for this. Right? Maybe, you know, we could talk about Jews have to die al Kiddush Hashem. But it's machlokas rishonim, v'gaya zechiv, to die al Kiddush Hashem, let's say the Sheva Mitzvah Spinei Noach. And over here, you're going to endanger your life. And according to the Bar Benel, he's telling him, don't do it. He's going to accuse you of becoming a Jew. You're going to get in all sorts of trouble. So you're asking to become a Jew. It's not clear. Yabar Benel says, don't do it. But the Rabbag says, sure. Right? So it's not clear what happened. It's interesting, the request. At the end of, I don't know if it was my Shana Aleph year or my Shana that year, I spoke at, you know, one of the Shabbos meals, and I quoted this, and I said, we're like Naaman. We're going back to this alien land. And we're wondering, how are we going to stay from in this alien land? And so we all have to figure out what we're going to bring back with us. Something, I don't know, some sort of tangible object that we could like look towards and be reminded of what it was like when we were back in yeshiva. And hopefully keep us strong. Right? So I remember, you know, I remember saying this every time I come to this. I remember that I said this, like, you know, the Bartor in the, you know, at the lunchroom. You know, I remember where I was standing. This is what he asked for. Okay. Now, what is the terrible, terrible irony when we contrast Naaman and Gehazi?
Is that they flip.
They flip. Naaman is this foreigner, an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, who, because he came in contact with Elisha, all of a sudden he changes. And his faith now is with the God of Israel. He's willing to give away his wealth. Please, here, take everything. I have camels laden with precious stones. I have clothing. I have money. Please, take this. And then you have who? Gehazi. Gehazi, who had been living with Elisha, who was his right-hand man. He was mentioned right in the last parak. You know, when Elisha, you read before, when Elisha sent, you know, Gehazi, go get the Isha Shunamit. Right? He's right-hand man. He's been traveling with him all this time. And now, instead of being influenced by Elisha and saying what's most important is Ruchnius, he looks for a way to make some money. And it's so sad. The Gemara in Sanhedrin lists three kings that don't have a share in Olam Haba and four non-kings that don't have a share in Olam Haba. The way to remember the four non-kings, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet. Mm-hmm. Okay? Who's Aleph? Non-king. That's a terrible person. Doesn't have a share in Olam Haba. I'll give you a hint.
Achitofel.
Good. Achitofel. Bet in Chumash. Rasha with Bilam. Bet. Bilam. Gimel is here, Gehazi. And Dalet is Doeg. Also Seva Shmo. Good. Doeg. Good. Now, the Gemara says Gehazi doesn't share in Olam Haba. So, why not? I mean, he is, just like what Rabina would say, as a dirty Jew, he just cares about money all the time. All right, fine. That means you don't have share in Olam Haba. All right, Mestamak Gehazi was still putting on tefillin. He was davening, you know, with a minion. He was learning. But, yeah, I figured out a way to make a quick buck. That means you lose your share in Olam Haba? So what's your answer?
Put it differently. Say that, first of all, he is Obed Hashem. Second of all, it's not that he's not going against the Torah, it's when he's being more extreme in his views. So this is one time that we see, at least so far that I've been here, but one time that we see that he's actually been, like, upset that he's done something. This is looking into the fact that he's taking it for himself. He's looking that wow, look what Elisha did. Look what he did. He deserves to get a reward. And now, Naaman is trying to give him a reward. Right? He's trying to give him a reward for what you did for me. And maybe look at it, not that he's looking at it for the fact that he's collecting for himself, but he's collecting from the fact that Elisha could see what he's done. So Elisha doesn't have to be so humble. And so he could let Naaman, even though he does it in a very flawed way, he's letting Naaman basically give a reward to show that Naaman did something worthy. Because by Elisha...
So then why is Gehazi being punished and doesn't have a share in Olam Haba? According to you, what Gehazi did is good.
So why doesn't he have a share in Olam Haba?
Right. Says Gehazi lost the share in Olam Haba. Take what he was saying and just flip it around. The whole idea of what Elisha did was that it should be a Kiddush Hashem. That he said, I don't accept money because I didn't do anything. It was all from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, right?
Yeah.
And now what he's saying? Fine, you know, I'll take some money. That's what it looks like, right? He undid the Kiddush Hashem of Elisha. That's one way. The other thing is, you know what Gehazi is being judged so harshly? Because he was a disciple of Elisha. We expect more from you than we expect of someone else. Right? Same way Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to judge you differently. You just spent a year sitting in the Beis Medrash with Rav Nevinson. That's what we were talking about a second ago, right before you walked in. If you're still just like acting the exact same way, so then that would be a sad thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is like saying, really? You know, I worked it out. You were Zocha to have Rav Nevinson on the Beis Medrash with you. And you're still the same person. You're still same filthy mouth. Cursing your head off, you know. Not makbid on mitzvos. You were his angelic figure, you know, in the Beis Medrash. And I didn't have any hashpa on you. Now, imagine, you know, Kal v'chomer ben Kal v'chomer. He's not just someone in the Beis Medrash. You are his right-hand man. You're spending every minute. He was, the same way we said before, Elisha was the misharet of Eliyahu. Yeah. Poured water in Eliyahu. And therefore, look how great he is. Gehazi was that for Elisha. He should have been the next in line. With Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, we would have Eliyahu, Elisha, Gehazi. And yet, what did he do? Yeah, I'm figuring out a way to make more money. I see right now, here's my ticket. Right? This guy wants to give the money, so Elisha doesn't want to take it, but no, but he won't, no one hurt him. Right? And therefore, because of that attitude, this is what hassles him. This is why, what's Elisha's remark? You know what? All the tzarata was on him, it's on you now. Right? They totally switch. Gehazi comes out the true believer. I'm sorry, Naaman comes out the true believer, and Gehazi goes the way Naaman was pre this episode. A man stricken with leprosy, which we know from the Torah, is always some sort of punishment. Right? It didn't just stam come. You get it for punishment. Most famous is, that we talk about as Lashon Hara. The Gemara actually gives several different sins, but it's always a sin. So here it is, Gehazi and his children will have tzarat, right? Because of who his Rebbe was, that's what makes it, his sin, so much worse. And it goes back to what we were saying here, Elisha, everything he does, he's like representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is the total Shaliach Hashem. We say, Shlucho Shalodim Kamoso, well, the Shaliach of Hashem, it's like when Elisha acted, it was God acting. He's known as Isha Elokim. Every miracle that we see, the Yedak Yesh Navi B'Yisrael means Yesh Elokim B'Yisrael. Naaman returns to his land and he says, Hineina Yadati Ki Ein Elu Him B'Chol Ha'aretz Ki Him B'Yisrael. I know that there is only one true God. And that happened, why? Because of Elisha. And Gehazi sort of ruins it and doesn't see it. And is looking for a way to capitalize on his Rebbe's powers. What do you want to say?
I'm blinking on the third thing, but it says in Pirkei Avos three things that removes you from Olam Haba, and that's Taiva,
Kina, Taiva, and Kavod.
Yeah, and Kavod. So maybe I'm thinking like Taiva, like he let his Taivas get in his way.
Good.
And go after stuff.
I'll end with one last idea. Rav Menashe Wiener says, what made this so despicable? You have to think about who we're dealing with. Naaman, how do we begin this thing? How did he hear about Elisha?
From the letter.
From who? How did Naaman hear about Elisha?
From the king of...
Not from the king. He went to the king and asked permission to go to Elisha. How did he even hear about Elisha? Smack in the beginning.
Oh, from the what's it called? That girl.
From the Jewish maidservant that he had kidnapped in war. Okay, Aram is at war with Israel. We had pointed out in the previous prakim that Achav gets killed. Achav and Yoshaphat go into battle, and Achav is killed even though he's not wearing his royal garment. According to Chazal, who killed him? Naaman. Naaman is the warrior that killed the king of Israel. He captured a Jewish girl. He's an enemy. He's an enemy of Israel. There's no peace. And now, the request for help is itself somewhat ridiculous. Like, why should we help you? Times are hard here. It's a famine. You're not helping us out. We're at war. And now... You want help. So the king hears this and he tears his clothing. Saying, okay, they want to look for more reasons to start up with this and make life even more miserable. To which the Navi says, let them know there's a Navi be Israel. Mm. Okay. What happens here, yes?
So is this possible it's just temporary for Naaman? That it's just like, he's like on cloud nine, just like Achav was.
Maybe. We'll see.
It's just
we'll
today.
See. Yeah, we'll see.
And tomorrow,
right?
Back to his old ways.
Why doesn't Elisha take the money? And this will also explain why Elisha curses out Gehazi. Why didn't he just say, you know what? Give him back the money. Give him back the money. Or take all the money and destroy it. The way we see Yaakov Avinu took whatever shalal that the brothers took from Shechem and destroyed all this. Yeah. Why is he cursing him and his children? Shadat Sarah. What was so terrible? So here's the way Rabbi Menashe Avinu understands it. It would be as if, and Israel I think does it, these terrorist leaders that plot to kill us, people, the head of the Palestinian Authority, and the head of the Palestinian Authority, let's say Muhammad Abbas, asks Israel, can you treat my chief of staff? He's sick, and we don't have hospitals that could deal with it. And you know what we do? And we take them in, we take, you know, the president, Syria's wife or kid, and treat them in Israel. And we do it. Why do we do it? We do it because we're decent human beings. Imagine if they said, we want to pay you. Would Israel take the payment? No. You know why not? Because payment, that would imply that we have some sort of relationship going on here. Some sort of friendship. No. We did this because it's the right thing to do. We don't have a relationship with you. When Elisha refused the money, it's like, why would I take money from you?
You're our enemy.
Yeah, you're like Hafez al-Assad. You're Eichmann. I'm taking money from you? You know, I did what I had to do. Now leave. Right, now leave. Like that sign that's out there with the Pittsburgh thing where the doctor was treating the terrorist afterwards, right? Why? Because it's the right thing to do. You think the person said, oh, I want to pay you. He'd say, yeah, I'll take money from you. You just shot all the people in the shul. No, I'm not taking money from you. Right? I'm doing this the right thing to do. When he takes money, that sort of like implies relationship. And that's what Elisha says, no. When Gehazi comes up with the story, two Nevi'im just showed up, two B'nai Nevi'im showed up, and you know they can really use new suits and some money, so if you give me the money, that'll be good for everyone. Aside from the Chil Hashem that now we're taking the money, it looks like a relationship, it's also like saying, we don't have enough money to take care of our own. Right? Why would we want to take money? The biggest fight that happened in the beginning of the State of Israel nearly was a civil war, was should we take money from Germany, reparations? Ben-Gurion argued that we need the money, right? It's a young, fledgling state. We have all these new Olim that are coming in. The country doubled in size in 3 years. We need whatever help we can get. And if we're not the heirs to the Jews that were killed, who is? So yes, you know, Gam Ratzachta v'gam Yerashta, that was Eliyahu saying to the king for taking Navot's field, right, to Achav. Are you going to kill him and take his field? So Ben-Gurion said, we'll take the money. And Begin led like this attack. They ended up, it was a charge on the Knesset. They had to use tear gas to stop people. Windows were broken in the Knesset. Mm-hmm. Riots were going on. Yeah. And Begin was saying, it's blood money. We're not taking money. Let Germany feel like, okay, well now it's all good. And that's what's going on. We're going to accept money. And it's like saying, you know what? Thanks for helping us because we really needed the help. So you feel good about yourself? And that's what's going on. This is a terrible Chilul Hashem. Now, if you have real Nevuah, I'm sorry, if you have real Emunah, so you realize Kadosh Baruch Hu could change the situation overnight. This is exactly what's going to happen in the next parak. Next parak, we're going to talk about the situation is bad, the famine is bad, and Elisha says, don't worry. Overnight, things are going to change. But Gehazi didn't see that. He didn't see it. And that's why he gets upset at Gehazi. And he says, look, this guy killed our king, captured a Jewish girl. The siege around us, we're going through a famine. And you're now gathering money so you can buy livestock and your pals with him? That is reprehensible. And that's why he was so harsh on Gehazi. It's a very strong and powerful idea. We'll pick it up from the next paragraph.